Okay, today's daf is Bechorot Nun Aleph. We're going to start at the very top, second line. Shloshim shel eved, chamishim shel ones v'shal mefaten. Hatu lamali. So now they say, why do we need these cases? Why do they need them to tell us in the Mishnah? Let's just review the Mishnah on the bottom of Mem Tedem Abed said, chamesh leim shel ben b'manet tzuri. And then it said, Shloshim shel eved, chamishim shel ones v'shal mefaten, umeya shel mosi shemra, kulam b'shekel ha-kodesh b'manet tzuri, v'kulam nifim b'kesev v'shvei kesev chutz mishkalim. So now they say, why do we need all this? Hatana le'resha, onus umot, hatana le'resha. So they say, what do you need to say this? It already says it in the resha. It said in the Mishnah, chamesh le'im shel ben b'manet tzuri, and then it could have just said, v'chein shloshim shel eved, blah, blah, blah. But it says, the next list, it gives a list, shloshim shel eved, all that, kulam b'shekel ha'kodesh b'manet tzuri. So why is it repeating the same thing? So they say, Ones umotzi shemra itzricha. You needed it specifically for the case of Ones umotzi shemra, because salkadata chamina kevan de lo ktiv behu shkalim, ema zuze ba'alma, kamashmalan de melav kayal femehadade. There's a difference between the way it says about the chamesh slaim of the pidyon ben. There it says, it says Esrim Gera B'Shekel HaKodesh, okay? Like it says in a few of the cases. But for the Chamishim of Ones and Mefate and Motzi Shemra, it just says Mea Kesef or Chamishim Kesef. And it doesn't specify that it has to be in Shkalim. So you might have thought Kesef just means Zuzim. Therefore, it taught you here that it's Kulam B'shekel ha-kodesh b'manetzuri. That's why also the wording is different. It doesn't just say kulam b'manetzuri, it says kulam b'shekel b'manetzuri. It doesn't really explain the shloshim of Eved, where there it also says specifically shekel. So, but the assumption is once it brought the list and then it wanted to say, oh, by the way, and that matches, and you have to do the order here, that's explaining the Mishnah, and that matches what it was Rav, Rav Asi who said in yesterday's daf that any time it says kesef in the Torah, it means kesef atzuri, and it's talking about this shekel, the slaim, and not the zuzim. Okay, because remember, there's four zuz to a sela, right, or to a shekel. A sela and a shekel are synonymous. Chutz min hashkalim. So now it says the only exception to the rule, now this is for the last line, everything is bekesef, ubeshvei kesef, even something that's value, that has monetary value, except for shkalim. The machatzita shekel has to be done with specifically money, and not something that has the value of money, but isn't money. Tana, chutz mina shkalim. Now they're going to bring a braita that says not only shkalim, but there's also other exceptions to the rule. Chutz mina shkalim, umaser v'harayon. Okay, what are these? Shkalim, as we just said. The maser is maser sheni money. It says v'tzarta b'kesef. You have to make a bundle of kesef and bring it. And they learn from there it has to be money. V'harayon, we're going to see exactly where they learn this from. And the rayon is the ri'iyah, meaning the olat ri'iyah. You have to, okay, apropos for Shavuot, there's a mitzvah on all the regalim that you have to go to the mikdash and you have to bring olot ri'iyah. There's a machlokes Beit Shammai, what the minimum value of the korban that you can bring is. Is it one ma'ah or two ma'ah? Okay, Beit Hillel says one, they're more meikal. That ma'ah you have to pay with actual kesef. Okay, you can't use something else. You can't use something that's valued at money or has monetary value to it. Why? Shkalim ditnan. How do we know about shkalim? Because it says in the Mishnah, mitzarfim shkalim lidarbonot, mipnei masoya derech. Okay, there's two different ways to understand this line. What it means is clear. The question is how it relates to this. So it sounds like what can you do? You can take shkalim and you can turn them into darbonot. Okay, that's another type of coin. What's the issue? The issue is there was a messenger that would collect all the machatzita shkalim. Can you imagine him taking a huge pile of all these machatzita shkalim, quite heavy? So what would he be allowed to do? Transfer four machatzita shekels would transfer to a darbon. Okay, so that would, right, it's worth the value of two shekels, so four machatzita shekels, and that was because it got too heavy for him. Now, some people explain, specifically darbonot. What are darbonot? Now, what's the issue? The issue is, let's say, I think Rashi gives the example of pearls. I saw someone give the example of pearls. If you transfer it into pearls, well, the value of pearls might change. And that's why you have to, if you're going to be bringing something, it has to be a stable currency. So some people explain, well, Darbo, no, with these gold coins that had a stable currency, the price of gold didn't change. Now, other people say, well, what are you talking about? Of course the price of gold changes, and this obviously might depend on timing, right? We know in our time, price of gold changes. So the assumption of this opinion is that what doesn't change? Well, what does the Torah say? Kesef. It would have to be a silver coin, meaning, and not just that the coin was made from silver, but it weighed a particular weight in silver, and silver is a very stable currency. So either you say gold is like that, or you say gold is not like that. And by the way, it means it has to be a coin with a tsura on it also. That's their assumption. It's a silver coin, or maybe possibly a gold coin that has an etching engraving in it. And those kind of coins are stable. The other opinion says, no, no, no. What do you see about this shekel? You really, theoretically, what does it sound like this Mishnah is saying? Theoretically, you really have to bring the machatzita shekel itself. Because of the Masoya Derech, we allowed you to transfer it to Darbonim, but it's not really ideal. And that really you shouldn't be transferring it to gold, you really should be keeping it in the silver. But since there really was no choice, because how on earth is someone going to bring all those super shekelim? They were Meikel, but theoretically it's supposed to be. So there's two opposite ways of understanding that, which obviously come to very different conclusions as to what you could do with the shekel. Maser Dichtiv, what about Maser? Dichtiv Vitzarta Kesef Biyadecha. Okay, there it says vitzarta kesef yadecha, which means you're supposed to bind the money, you know, and carry it in a bundle. But what did they learn here? Tzarta from tzura. The kesef has to have a tzura. It has to be that type of kesef that won't fluctuate. V'harayon, this is a much more difficult passage because you would have expected it to bring you something that explains why it has to be this way, and it doesn't really. According to most opinions, this is just supporting the fact that the Braita says it, because also Tane, some people say the Gersa is Tane Nami Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef also brings a Braita that says the same thing about the Rayon, Shelo Yavi Sigala Ezra, that you're not allowed to bring Sigim, or money that doesn't have good value to it, okay? It's wiped out, it's something, you know, something's off about it, or it's mixed with other metals, okay, that you can't bring Sigal Azara, meaning, again, you can't bring it to the Beit HaMikdash for your chiyuv of the olot that you're supposed to bring on the Shalosh Regalim. Okay, next Mishnah. Ein pudin lo ba'avadim ve'lo b'shtarot ve'lo b'karkov ve'lo b'ekdeshot. Let's just go back for 1 second. The last line of the previous mission that we just explained was, you can bring something that has monetary value for Pidyon HaBen. But here it's telling you, well, not everything that has monetary value. It would have to be what we call metaltalin, movable property. But avadim, you can't use avadim. Give a coin an eved for your Pidyon HaBen. You can't use shtarot, okay, a document, that an IOU. Let's say somebody owes you money. You can't give him that. Below, what we're going to see, you also can't write him a shtar and say, I owe you 5 sla'im. That's not good. V'lo b'karkaot, you can't pay him in land. V'lo b'hekdeshot, and you can't pay him in hekdesh. We're going to have to explain what does this mean. That is, why would you think you could pay him in hekdesh? Okay, so I'll explain to you a pshat way that you could read it. We're going to see the Gemara doesn't understand it this way. Lo b'hekdeshot theoretically could be that the Mishnah holds, like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who holds that Kodshim Kalim are considered Mamon Baalim. So therefore, if you had Kodshim, what it means by Hekdeshot are things that were sanctified, like your Korban Shlamim meat. So theoretically, you could give that to the Kohen if we view it as it belongs to you, because you can eat it. But we're going to see that the Gemara doesn't explain it that way. Katav l'Kohen shu chayav liten 5 sla'im. Let's say he writes a shtar that says, I owe you 5 sla'im. Chayav liten lo. Chayav litein lo. Okay, so first of all, you've created a monetary obligation to yourself.
Even though we just said you can't do that.
Exactly. Wait. It gets even more interesting. Okay, so you write a shtar that says, I owe you 5 sla'im. So first of all, since you wrote a shtar, you owe 5 sla'im. You do owe the Kohen 5 sla'im because you committed to that. Ubino eino padoy. But even if you give him the 5 sla'im, that doesn't count for Pidyon HaBen. Okay? You've created a monetary obligation for yourself, but that's... You can't use that money for Pidyon HaBen.
What if you wrote in the shtar, this is for, not just I owe you, but I owe you.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Okay, because you're not allowed to pay with a shtar. Okay? We're going to see more about this in the Gemara. Lefichach, im ratza kohen, liten lo b'matana, rashai. If the Kohen wanted to return the 5 Sla'im to him, he could do that if he wants. Okay?
This is the second 5 Sla'im, the one to use for pigeon. I was wondering whether
that was okay, I was actually thinking about it. Oh, so first of all, we're going to see that. But I just want to look at Rashi for a minute. Chamesh Sla'im Achirim Lepigyon Aben, Rashi says, Im Ratzakoin Lachziram, Dibidam no Bematana, I can't. Right. I guess the point is, since he made this Hitchaibut of the 5 Sla'im, and then he gave it to him, and then in addition, he had to give him another 5, I'm not sure it's so critical which ones he's returning, but okay. So again, there's even a Nusach problem in Rashi, which one it is, because it's not so clear. But either which way, if he wants to return, let's just assume the second ones, he wants to return the second ones he gets, since he really got more than he was supposed to get, he can return them. Hamafrish pidyon bino va'avad. Okay, let's say, right, what does it mean to do the mitzvah pidyon aben? If you separate the money, you're about to give it to the Kohen and someone comes and steals it, or it falls, you know, falls, gets lost, somehow you lose it. Doesn't matter, I said he's about to give it. It doesn't matter if he's about to give it. He already separated it for the purpose. It doesn't have to be that he's about to. Either which way, chayav b'achrayuto. He is responsible, okay? Meaning, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah until you actually hand it to the Kohen. Shenemar, how do we get this? Okay, remember this point, that there's a pasuk that teaches us, because the Gemara later is going to say, where do we learn this from? What pasuk? They bring 2 pasukim, and then they say, what do you mean? It says in the Mishnah, a pasuk, okay? Shenemar, right, these are points you wouldn't necessarily remember when we get later on, but notice that there's a pasuk. Shenemar, yelecha ufado tifteh. Okay, so what does that mean? And let's just read the whole pasuk so that we understand what they're talking about. The pasuk says, "Kol petarechem l'chol basar asher yakrivu l'Hashem b'adam u'beima yihyeh lecha, will be for you the kohen. Ach pado tifteh b'chor adam v'b'chor b'ema b'ema tifteh." So now they say, because it says yihyeh lecha and then it says ufado tifteh, what do they learn from this? That it will be for you, and then it will be redeemed. In other words, only once it gets to your hands, the Kohen, will it be considered that the redemption was done. Okay, the first thing the Gemara is going to do is say, Matnitin delo kerebi. Our Mishnah must not match Rebbe's opinion. Now, we're going back to the beginning since we saw a few halachot here. Let's start from the first line again. Well, you can't be poda with an eved, a shtar, karko, or hektish. So the Mishnah must not follow Rebbe. Ditanya, because the Braita says, by the way, this is just an interesting point. Rebbe is Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, and he's the one who put the Mishnah together. It's always kind of interesting when he decides not to put his own opinion into the Mishnah, right? It shows that when he was putting together the Mishnah, it wasn't like he was just trying to say, I want my opinion to get in there, right? But that he collected different opinions about things and didn't always do things according to his own opinion. Ditanya, Rebbe Omer, b'chol podim b'chor adam. You can use anything, okay, seemingly, any of the things mentioned in the Mishnah, except for, there's only one thing you can't use, chutz min hashtarot, except for a shtar, a document. My time at the Rebbe, what's his reasoning? Darish riboy umiuta. Now we go back to the klal upratu klal and riboy v'miut. These are two different methods used for darshaning psukim. Klal upratu klal is going to be a more limiting, and they're both based on the same thing. If there's a generalization, there's a specification, and there's a generalization, right? Riboy and klal is kind of means they're pretty close to being synonymous. But the style of drasha is if you call it a riboy miud, it means you're going to be mirabe, you're going to include a lot of things, and that's why Rebbe included a lot of things. If you're going to go with the klal upratu klal, you're going to say that it's limiting to only things that are very much like the prat. So what's our pratu klal here? What's our riboy umiut? We're going to see the other opinion is klal upratu klal. Upduyomi ben chodesh tifteh. Okay, so what do we see here? Riba. Okay, so let's just read the whole pasuk first. You're going to notice something strange about this riboy umiut, which is it's a little out of order. Usually a klal upratu klal or riboy umiut, riboy is klal, then prat, then klal. Riboy, miut, then riboy. Right? But this case is going to have the two generalizations or the two wider terms being together and then the specifics. That's why I want you to see the pasuk. Updu yomi ben chodesh tifteh berkacha kesef chameshet shkalim b'shekel ha-kodesh esrim gerahu. Okay, I think that's the pasuk they're darshaning. So now what do they say? Updu yomi ben chodesh tifteh, that's riba. Be'erkecha kesef, right? Then it says the next word is be'erkecha kesef, chameshet shkalim mi'et. And then tifdeh riba. Okay, so now, where's the tifdeh? The tifdeh is updu yo, mi ben chodesh tifdeh. Really, it shouldn't say tifdeh in the first line. It should just say updu yo mi ben chodesh, right? Updu yo mi ben chodesh. Then comes the word tifdeh. Okay, there you have your first riboy, and then your second riboy. And then the miut is be'erkecha, according to its value, right? And it says kesef chamesha tchalim b'shekel ha'kodesh. That's the miut, okay? So, right now we're not worrying about the order. We'll get back to that. So, mi'et riba, 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 u'mi'et. Riba, riba, hakol, right? When it includes everything. My rabbe, kol mile. So then, what did it include? Anything. You can do the pidyon, updu yomi ben chodesh. Just do pidyon with anything. Umay mi'et. Then, when it says specifically, be'er kecha, that comes to exclude what? Specifically shtarot. Okay? Just one type. Why shtarot is the obvious one it's going to exclude? Because a shtar, we always say, ein gufo mamon. It has no monetary value. The shtar itself is a piece of paper, which isn't really worth anything. Or worth very, very little. Okay? It's true that what's in the shtar could be worth a lot, but the shtar itself has no value. Whereas everything else here has inherent value. That would be the word, inherent value. The Rabbanan darshe klalu prat. They use the klalu prat structure, not the riboy umiyot. Updu yomi ben chodesh klal, berkechach kesef chamishet shkalim prat, tifdeh chazar v'kalal. Klalu pratu klal, yata dan ela ke'en haprat. Ma haprat meforash davar mitaltel v'gufo mamon, Av kol davar mitaltel v'gufo mamon. So now we're going to say what? The klal upratu klal comes to exclude only things that are like the money. What's unique about the money? Well, it's something that's movable. You can carry it. And gufo is mamon. It has inherent value. So yatzu, here we're going to go through our list. Yatzu karkaot she'en mitaltel. Land is not movable. Very simple. Yatzu avadim shukshu lekarkaot. If you remember, there's a pasuk about the avadim that says, "V'hit nachaltem otam." I don't remember all that here. "V'hit nachaltem otam lebnechem acharechem lareshet achuza lo'olam behem tavodu." Sounds like nachala. They say they're compared to land. What did you say, Naomi?
No, that they're considered non-movable.
Right. Non-movable. Again, we always have a bit of a debate. Sometimes it ends up in the other category, but usually we say it's like karka. Yatzu shtarot, now shtarot come out, sha'af al-pisha metaltzin, even though they're movable, ein gufan mamon, they don't have inherent value. So that's how we exclude all of them. Amrele Ravina lima'rimim. So that's our thing. Rebbe does ribuy miut, and chachamim do klal upratu klal, right? Okay, now we're going to have a problem. Rebbe does ribuy miut, ribuy, we're going to have a problem, because it doesn't seem to match Rebbe in other places. The assumption is, either you look at all the psukim that are like this in one type of, you do one style of drasha, or you do the other style. Either you're a klal upratu klal guy, or you're a riboy umiyut guy. You can't be both. So we're going to have a problem. For Rebbe, riboy umiyut darish. Baha Rebbe, klal uprate darish. Here we have I'm going to show you a case where Rebbe is darshaning klal upratu klal. And it's in this case, what did we just say? We assumed the distinction between them is based on, we made up, really, that, you know, the Gemara said it must be that's the reason. It's another question. How do you say that the reason when we have an explicit place where he darshans otherwise? Bimartzeah. Okay, we actually learned this not so long ago. When you pierce the ear of the Eved Ivri who doesn't want to leave his master after 6 years, Ditanya. Here's the Braita. Martzeah. Ein li ala martzeah. It says you have to use an awl. How do you know that all types of other implements that are sharp, that are not necessarily metal, like a palm thorn or a regular thorn or a needle or a drill bit or a stylus, how do you know that all those things are also included? Tamud lamar vilakachta lirabot kol davar shenol kach bayad. Divrei Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, it says vilakachta. So again, let's look at the pasuk. Vilakachta et hamartzeah. So you take. Why does it say v'lakachta? Lakachta means you can really take anything. You're just giving an example of a martzeah. Anything that you can hold in your hand, right? It has to be something you can hold in your hand. That obviously also has to be sharp to make a hole, but it doesn't matter what material it's made of. That's Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Omer martzeah. Because it says martzeah, he says, ma martzeah miyuchad shamatechet, av kol shamatechet. Just like a marzeah is metal, it can only mean things that are metal. Now, again, he doesn't actually specifically say, I use klal prat uklalim. But, again, what do the rabbis say about this? V'amrina, v'may kamiflage, what must be the root of their machloket? Rebbe darish klali uprate, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda darish riboy umiute. Okay, how do you get it? Because it says bilakachta is a klal, or a riboy. Marzea is specific. And then it says vinatata bozno. That's general. This is a little bit different than the usual, because we're using verbs. Usually it's nouns or something. It's a little weird to say, and you take, and you put, right, that those are so general, but you could say, right, you could take anything, you put anything, and then in the middle it's specifically something. So, there you have it. So now we say, how could you possibly say this, right? Then we're stuck. Because there, Rebbe clearly dashins kalali uprate, that it's only things that are like the prat. A marzeah is metal, anything that's metal. So, what are the answer? Well, im. You're right, the Ba'alma Rebbe Klali Uprate Darish. Really, he does Darshan Klal Uprat. He's a Klal Uprat guy. However, there's an exception to the rule of when he's a Klal Uprat to Klal guy. Ha-ha kiditana debe Rabbi Yishmael. In this case, he holds, in our case, like the way Rabbi Yishmael brought a brayta from the house of Rabbi Yishmael, ditana debe Rabbi Yishmael, b'mayim shtei panim. We also learned this not so long ago. Okay, what's the context here? The context is kashrus in fish. Ach et ze tochlu mikol asher b'mayim. There you have your generalization. From anything that's in the water, here are the rules. Kol asher lo snapir b'kaskeset b'mayim. Now we have another general b'mayim. Notice b'mayim is repeated twice here, right? It says, from anything in the water, anything that has scales and fins, in the water, b'yamim u'b'nechalim, specifically in the ponds and the streams, otam tochelu, those you can eat. So it says, again, what do we have? We have mayim, and then yamim, which is yamim and nechalim, which are more specific, right? They're prad or mute. Okay, now notice, again, this is much more like our structure, where you have the two klalim together and the prad after, or the two ribuyim together and the mute after. So here we say, ein ze klalu prat, ela riba umiet. Okay, the Tana de Rabbi Yishmael there, that from the house of Rabbi Yishmael, they had a brayta that says, this is not a klal uprat, in this case it's a riboy umiyat. Rabbanan amrei kedamrina b'mar rava, and the rabbis say no, like they say in Eretz Yisrael. Kol makom sh'ata motse shtei klalot smuchot zeh lazeh, hatel prat b'nehem v'dunam b'klal uprat. So now our machloket is not, do we in general take klal uprat uklal or riboy miyad umiyad? If we go back to the beginning, we said Rebbe says it's riboy umiyad, Rachamim says it's klal uprat. The machloket is about specifically when you have a klal uprat or riboy umiyad, you know, a generalization and then specific, and the specific comes after, do we view it like Rabbanan, that it doesn't really matter the order, and we view it as if it came in the middle, just like in the Degim case. Right, and that's what the Degim case is, a strange case. We'd say the sign of, if we didn't use this klal, well, we say the sign of snapir v'kaskeset is only for fish that are in the water. Otherwise, it's not a sign of kashrut. Okay, it would be a weird drasha. The point is, no, it really is everywhere. And Rebbe, who says, no, since this is an atypical klal, a pratu klal, we're not going to call it a pratu klal, we're going to call it a riboy umiyat, which means, again, what does it mean? It includes more things, which kind of makes sense. If you're going to put the two riboys together, they have more koch almost. Potentially, you could say. I mean, you could come up with any theory about this, but... Okay. Velo behekdeshot. Okay, so now they say, now we're going back to that line, not behekdeshot. As I said, one could say the Mishnah is just like Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and some ask the question, why didn't the Gemara just answer that? The Kochim Kalim belong to the Baalim, and therefore you could theoretically, you know, and that's, again, it's only theoretically you could use it. The Mishnah's coming to tell you you can't use it. So the Gemara says, Pshita, lav didenu. The Gemara assumes, no. It obviously doesn't belong to him. It's hekdesh. They assume that, what does it mean, hekdesh? Oh, it's something that one sanctified to the Mikdash, which of course doesn't belong to you. So, Ema, v'lo hekdesho b'chol elu. Read the Mishnah differently. This isn't a list of Eim Podim with Avadim, Shtarot, Karkaon, and Hekdeshot. No. It reads like this. You can't be Podah at your son with Avadim, Shtarot, or Karkaon, three things. Velo Hekdeshot means that you also can't redeem Hekdesh with the following items. Okay, so then it's a totally different understanding. Katav l'kohen shu chayav lo chamesh sleim. Now we get to the strange case about you wrote a shtar saying you owe him chamesh sleim for pidyon haben. You still have to give him the chamesh sleim, but your son is not actually redeemed. So we're going to see it's actually a subject of machloket. Amar Ula, Dvar Torah b'no padoy l'chashiyitain. Ula says that really by Torah law, if you give the guy the five sleim afterwards, after writing the shtar, your son really is redeemed. But my time, my aim, b'no padoy. But why does the Mishnah say he's not? Gzeira shema yomru podim b'shtar. We're worried that people will think that just by giving an IOU, that's going to be sufficient to be podi your son, and it's not. Okay, and by creating a chov mamuni, you would think that's already, okay, my son is redeemed, I just have to give the guy the money. You can't do that. So because of that, they didn't allow it even in the case where you give the money. So he agrees with the Mishnah, he just points out that the Mishnah is a halacha derabanan, basically. Tani tana kamei derav Nachman. An Amora brought a braita in front of Rav Nachman. Bino padoy l'chashiyitain. Okay, they disagreed with our Mishnah and disagreed with what Ula said, that in fact, when you give the money, he is redeemed. Amar le Rav Nachman, zo divrei Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda skim ta'ah, v'amru la zo divrei Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon skim ta'ah. Okay, there's two versions of who it is, but Rav Nachman comes and says, that braita is attributed to a particular opinion of one or the other of these people. When it says skim ta'ah, it means that often we have braita that don't have a name that are set, that were said by the following people.
So it's satum?
Satum, no, it means stum. Like it was written in stum without their name, and there's a lot of braita that are written without a name, and they are, we know that it's the opinion of these people. Aval chachamim amrim ein beno padoy. But he says, but the chachamim don't agree with this. Behilchatan, the halacha is ein beno padoy. Lefichach. Now we go to this line. Im ratza kohen liten lo b'matana rashai. And here's what Ruth mentioned earlier about, you know, what about the minhag nowadays? I don't know if you're familiar, but the very common minhag is, right, unless you're a kohen and or you have a firstborn son, a lot of people don't even necessarily go to pidyon haben. But what generally happens is he gives the money to the kohen, and the kohen generally returns it as a gift to the person. Now, the Mishnah said it in a case specifically where the person overpaid, double paid. But here, they say, taninu lahadah detanu rabbanan, this line, if it didn't have the word lefichach, we would have assumed it meant what we do, lahalacha. But since it's lefichach, it's a little tricky, but the Gemara still understands. It says, look, this braita, this Mishnah also supports or kind of fits in with the following braita. Natnu la'asara kohanim bevat achat yatsa. If you, no, here's an interesting thing. This doesn't have to do with our case. But if you want to share the money with a bunch of different kohanim, okay, and you say, I'm taking five sla'im and I'm giving it to all of you. You can divide it up between yourselves. You can, you're yotze. Okay, because you gave it all in one, at one time. If you gave one day one seller to a kohen, the next day another seller to a different kohen, that doesn't work. But if you give it all at the same time, there's considered a nitina that you've done a nitina of five sleim, even though you're sharing it. Bezeh herzeh yatsa. If you give it to one person, and you give him one day a sela, the next day a sela, the next day, that also works. Because over time, you're giving one person, not to many people, but to one person. Natzlo v'hichziru lo yatsa. Here's our case. If you gave it to him, and he gives it back to you, you're yotzeh. Okay? That so far, that actually fits in with our Mishnah, because as our Mishnah says, the Kohen could potentially do it, which means basically that if you gave it and the Kohen returned you the money, it's fine. Bekach hayam minagosh Rabbi Tarfon. Here comes the big line. This is what Rabbi Tarfon, who was a Kohen, would do. Shahayan notel umachzir. He would take the money from people and he would give it back. Ukishashamu chachamim b'davar. Now you always have interesting, right? It's always, how did the rabbis react to what he did? Right? Sometimes they heard and they got upset, or they heard and they did. Amru kiyem zehalachazo. Okay? So it says, he was mekayim this halacha. Now, either one could interpret this as, he was mekayim the mitzvah pidyon haben, meaning there's no problem with it. Now, that would be strange. Why would the rabbis say about Rabbi Tarfon, he was a pretty big, you know, he doesn't need their pat on the back, pat on the shoulder, to say, oh, great job. But some people say, kiyem ze halacha zo means this halacha should be established for generations, which explains why generally that's what happens. Okay? So now, a few things about this. First they say, halacha zo betu lo, right? What do you mean? Kiyem ze halacha zo. Another, so first they take it very literally. Rabbi Tarfon was mekayim this halacha. What, he wasn't mekayim any other halacha? Ela kiyem ze apalacha. So, you know, he even was mekayim nesalacha. Again, that means, you know, despite the way he did it, or specifically, we, you know, he did it in this unique way, and we want to establish it for generations. Rabbi Chanina have a ragil v'shakel u'mahader. Rabbi Chanina would generally do this also, like Rabbi Tarfon. He would take the money and give it back. So one time came a guy with a bechor. He gave him the money. So he gives him the money, and Rabbi Chanina doesn't give the money right away back. And then the guy's kind of hanging around, hinting, blah, 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 right, pacing around. And what does Rabbi Chanina say? Amar le, right, he was going around before him. Amar le, lo gamarti v'yahavit. Right, lo gamarti v'yahavit. In other words, you didn't really have. What has to happen? You have to give it to the Kohen, knowing that the Kohen might not return it to you. And you, lo gamar, means you didn't like think in your head that you were really giving it to me, which means that your pidyon was really not a good pidyon. Agidekach, he says to him, midayim bish, this is a terrible, remember we used the word chanam bisha at the end of yesterday, right? You're an embarrassment, this is a terrible thing that you did, you're a bad guy, or you did something wrong. Hilkach ein beno patoy, and therefore your son is not redeemed. Right, and then he lost his money, he had to give new money to Rabbi Chanina. Okay, so here you see there's a bit of a, right, in other words, on the one hand, what he's really getting at is something interesting, which is that on the one hand, the Kohen should really just give the money back. It's not like, again, it's strange. There is a financial obligation, and why we don't view this like other matznot kuna, where we want to make sure the Kohenim are taken care of, but really, you know, we don't view this as his money deserving of the Kohen. The Kohen should really give it back. I mean, he doesn't have to, but they're also pointing out that you have to still make sure you're doing the pidyon with wholeheartedly and not otherwise, because there really is a financial thing going on here, and if you don't, then it's not going to be done. Hamafrish pidyon b'no v'avad chayav v'achrayuto. So now we're going to say minalim. Where do we learn this from, that you're chayav v'achrayuto? One second. Ah, I forgot. I wanted to talk about this. When we talked about the shtar, just wrote myself notes. I was thinking about this. Give me a second. Right. When we go back to this giving the shtar to the Kohen, and the giving the shtar is no good because people will think that you can use the shtar chov. So there's a concern. What will people think? There's two concerns. One is that the pidyon is actually done by the shtar, and just that you have a chiyuv mamoni right now, it's just a financial obligation, but you've taken care of your other obligation, which, by the way, shows what? That there's two things going on. It's not just a financial obligation. It's also a chiyuv of the mitzvah pidyon haben, which we've been, and as I wanted to go back to this, because I thought that this sugya really gets at the crux again about what is it? Is it a financial thing? If it's purely financial, then why shouldn't a shtar work? Theoretically, it's just you're creating a financial obligation. And the other thing is, people will think that you can actually use an IOU to pay it. Meaning, let's say someone owes you money, you can give that shtar chov to the Kohen, and he can go collect your five sleim that someone else owes you from that person. And we certainly don't want that to happen because, you know, first of all, shtar chov is not always easy to collect, and we want to give the Kohen something in hand. So the question is, what's problematic about these things? So one is because the father is not actually giving, and the shtar chov is problematic for what reason? Number one, the father's actually not giving the money. Remember, the obligation's on the father, which again, it gets to the crux of, it shows here, it's not just that you have to give money, it's that you actually have to do something. You have to do an act. The father has to actually do the act. We even talked the other day about maybe a shaliach can't do it, right? So it's the same idea here, that the father has to actually do it himself. The shtar chov is almost like saying, I'm using a shaliach to do it, someone else will pay you the money. When the lover pays the Kohen, he's not actually paying the Kohen for the mitzvah of pidyon haben. He's paying the Kohen because to pay back his own loan. So it's also a reason why it's a problem. What's interesting is the Machane Ephraim, it's a commentary on the Rambam, he says that it could be that if you gave a Kohen a shtar chov that's more than five sleim, then theoretically you could do that. Why? Because that shtar chov can be sold in the shuk for five sleim. If you have, okay, it's easier to sell. If you have a shtar for five sleim, someone owes you five sleim, you go to sell, let's say, you know, the person, you go to sell that people aren't going to buy it for 5 sla'im because they still have to collect the money. It's not worth that much because maybe they'll never get the money back, but maybe they're willing to buy it for another chance. They'll buy it for 4 sla'im and they'll, you know, hopefully they'll make some money on it. But if you, but he claims that if you would give him a shtar for more money that would easily be sellable for 5 sla'im, that you could potentially do. Because then you don't need to do that. So that's just interesting. Okay. And this, again, I think that really underlying this is all, is it a financial obligation or is there something more going on here? Okay, last section before we get to the Mishnah. Hamafrish pidyon benova avad chayav b'achriyutom minalan. How do we know that you're chayav b'achriyut? Amar b'shimon ben Lakish, atya erech erech mi'erchin. We learn it from, okay, by the way, I just want to remind you, in case you forgot, when we learned this in the Mishnah said, we learn it from Yelchau Pidotifde. So here, we're going to, this is the part where they start bringing psukim, and then they're going to ask why we bring psukim, and there's already a pasuk proving this in the Mishnah. So they say, we learn it from Erchin. If you say, the value of someone is upon me, and then, right, in this case, right, you separate the value, and then you don't give it, the money gets lost, you're obviously chayav, okay? Or another example, right? The issue could be what if the truth is we're going to get to that part after. Rav Dimi Amar Rabbi Yonatan b'chol b'chor banecha tifde b'lo yiru panai rekam. If you remember the pesukim about the shalosh regalim, right? Lo yiru panai rekam. It comes up all the time, right? You have to come to the Bein Hamikdash lo yiru panai rekam. And what does it say here? B'chol b'chor banecha tifde. The same lashon is used here about lo yiru panai rekam. You have to redeem your son and don't come to me empty-handed. The yelef rekam rekam eolat riyah. Just like ma olat riyah chayav b'achriyuto. Just like olat riyah, you're chayav b'achriyut. Av pidyon aben, you're chayav b'achriyut. Okay, what does mean you're chayav b'achriyut? Let's say, okay, for this is true for erechim. Let's say you say I'm giving the erech of a person upon me, and then the person dies. Okay, you still have to pay the money. If you say if the father walks into the Beit HaMikdash on the Amim Naraim, he's chayav in olat riyah, he has to pay that money. If he dies right there on the spot, or just didn't end up giving the money and then subsequently dies, he has a chiyuv mamoni, a financial obligation, and the children have to pay it. Okay, the yorshim have to pay it. That's what it means in all this case, chayav b'achriyut. From there we learn to the b'chor also. So, matke flarav papa. A papa says, what do you mean? Kra, you're bringing a pasuk to prove a pasuk? We already said there's a pasuk to prove it. Right? Why do you need a pasuk to prove the pasuk? Ella, right? The Mishnah already gave a pasuk. Ella amar papa, ha kedikatani tama yelecha apado tifde. It's the real reason why your chayav b'achriyut is from the pasuk. It says in the Mishnah, yelecha apado tifde. V'chi itmar derish lakish areisha itmar. When Rish Lakish was talking about that we bring these psukim and Rav Dimi and the name of Rabbi Yonatan was saying either we learn it from Erchin or we learn it from B'chor Banecha, we were really learning about the case of death. We were really learning it about the Reisha. What does the Reisha mean? Not the beginning of our Mishnah, but a few Mishnayot ago when we talked about Meitla, Har Shloshim Yom. If the son dies or the father dies after 30 days, Afal Pi Shelo Natan Yitain. Right, even if he hasn't paid the money, he has to give the money, right? As long, because what happened? The financial obligation was incurred already at day number 30. So just like, right, if the son dies, or even if the father were to die, the Yorshim have to do it, and that we learn from Erechin, or from Olav Riyah. And then, Amarish Lakish, Ram Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Ati Erech Erech Mi Erechin, and Rav Dimi, and Rav Yonatan, V'chol B'chor B'necha Tivdeh, V'lo Yiru Panarikam. Ma Lahalan Yorshim Chayavin, Av Kan Yorshim Chayavin. So we're not learning the din of achrayut from there. We're learning the din. They're sort of interconnected. Right? Achrayut means also if you die, then the yorshim have to pay. But we're learning the din of the yorshim, that the yorshim have to take care of it in the case of death. Okay, I'll start you off on the next Mishnah for tomorrow. Habachor notel pishnayim b'nichsei ha'av. Veino notel pishnayim b'nichsei ha'em. Okay, a bachor takes pishnayim from only his father's. Right now that we're talking about bachor in general, let's talk about other things about bachor. So Bechor, we started with this anyway, right, about Nachala. So the Bechor gets Pishnayim only from his father's possessions, not from his mother's. Okay, they're going to learn this. I'll just give you a sneak preview. In the Gemara, they're going to say, Amar Kra v'lo mishpata Bechora, which means, okay, this is ki yakir et ben Bechor ben asnua yakir latet lo Pishnayim b'chol asher yimatzei lo, ki hu roshit eino, he's reshit ono, v'lo mishpata Bechora. Now, lo there seems to be referring to the Bechor, but they say lo mishpata Bechora means the mishpata Bechora comes from lo, from the father, not the mother. Okay, also the whole context of that pasuk is about a father giving Yerusha to his child. Rashi says here, by the way, what nechsei ha'em are we talking about? Women generally don't have their own possessions. So he says it's nechsei malug. The Mefarshim say, why wouldn't he say nechsei barzal? And others, any nechasim the woman has, theoretically, if it would have to be in the event that her husband died before her or divorced her, she's on her own, she has these nechasim, whatever property she has, those would go to her son. Okay? This question is asked why he specifically says nechsei malug. I'm not going to get into the differences again. You know, one goes up in value, one goes down in value. She takes a loss, doesn't take a loss. The things she brings into the marriage that leave with her, leave when she leaves the marriage. But in any case, it's a little strange why Rashi specifically says those. Theoretically, it should be any nechassim the woman has. So again, her child can be yoresh her, just the bechor wouldn't get double. Ve'eino notel b'shevach. He doesn't get if the property went up in value after the father died, he only gets pishnayim of what was the value of the possessions at the time of the death of the father. If the property went up in value over time, before they divided up the property, he doesn't get pishnayim of the revach, the shevach, the value, the additional value. Velo b'ra'oy kibimuchzak, and not something that the father didn't own at the time of death that was going to come to him anyway, okay? Or potentially could have come to him. Like what? Like, for example, let's say his brother was alive still and didn't have any children. So if the brother's alive and doesn't have children, the father will ultimately inherit him. But if the father dies first, right, and then later his brother dies and the money goes to the father, that, even though it was re'oy to go to the father at the moment of the father's death, and it's what happens basically in that case, so it goes through the father to the sons. The sons basically inherit it directly. But the bechor doesn't get pishnayim of that. Only things that were in the possession of the father. Below ha'isha b'ktubata, below ha'bamanop zonotehem, below et hayabam, okay, all those people, kulam eino lim b'shevach ela b'ro'oy k'b'muchzak. Now, if you notice, first of all, this last line is totally unnecessary because we already said that once we say velo ha'isha b'ktubata, we know it means she doesn't get the shevach or the ro'oy k'b'muchzak. Obviously, the Gemara is going to ask, what's this last line coming to include? But the point is that all the following people don't get the shevach or the ro'oy k'b'muchzak of the let's say in the isha k'tubata from the yorshim, from the inheritors, if the husband dies, she can't claim her k'tuba money from the additional value that the property has after the death of her husband, only from what was in his hands at the time, and also not from, let's say, some inheritance he gets later on. She can't get from there, and the daughters can't get their mizonot from that extra. And the Yabam, when he inherits his brother, okay, the Yabam is known, he takes the inheritance of his brother, he also only gets what the brother had at the time of death and not anything that was coming his way, and not anything that any increase in value of the property is what would generally happen. He has a bunch of brothers, whoever does Yibum, and it's supposed to be the oldest, theoretically, and then it goes down in the line, if you remember. This is all going to come up in the Gemara. So he gets, as the Yabam, he gets the Yerusha of, he gets all the Nachala of the brother, which was one of the incentives really to do Yibum.
And then if he has a firstborn son.
Well, his firstborn son will get Pishnayim of whatever is
his.
But the point is that when he gets the possessions of the brother, we're not talking about Pishnayim now, he only gets the possessions of the brother, if it increased in value from the time the brother died before he did Yibum, or some people even say maybe after, but let's just stick with before he did Yibum, the Shevach would be divided equally between all the other brothers. Mm. Because he hadn't done Yibum yet and it went up in value. Or anything that, let's say, later on the uncle dies and their father's no longer alive, and they, you know, it's supposed to go to all the brothers. Does he get his brother's portion? No. Because his brother's not alive anymore, and it's as if his brother's erased from the picture at that point. He doesn't get his brother's portion of that stuff. It's very similar to the Pishnayim, because he doesn't get the extra portion that he's supposed to get from that. He gets his own portion, you know, his own, really, but the brother's portion gets divided up evenly between all the brothers.